Hi, you're listening to an audio documentary brought to you by the independent think tank Respublica, narrated by Jack Haldane. This is Dust to Dust. Dust to Dust has been released as part of a nationwide campaign by Respublica to urge the UK government to reform its safety monitoring standards around asbestos in public buildings. We think some of the stories you'll hear throughout the series will shock you as much as they have us, and we'll encourage you to follow the whole story of how this mineral that became an essential building block of modern industry in the 20th century left a lethal legacy still at large today. Dust to Dust is a four-part series. We hope you enjoy part one. Around 20 years ago, about a month before the dawn of the millennium, the UK government passed a bill banning the last of a family of minerals known collectively as asbestos. White asbestos, also known as chrysotile, had continued to meet demand from British industries well after the initial ban in 1985, which made illegal chrysotile's markedly more toxic cousins, brown asbestos, otherwise known as amosite, and blue asbestos, known as chrysidolite. For over a century, all three were mined and processed in enormous quantities to make roofing and insulation materials, water supply lines and clutches, clothes, brake linings, gaskets and pads for cars, as well as a range of other products. During the Industrial Revolution, asbestos became known as the magic mineral. It was cheap, abundant, durable, insulating, acid-proof, fireproof, waterproof, even soundproof. The UK, historically a seafaring nation, fell in love especially with its ability to insulate and fireproof ships and naval vessels. In the 60s and 70s, the UK imported 170,000 tons of asbestos each year, making it one of the world's biggest net importers. Today, many countries still mine asbestos. The biggest producers are Russia, China, and Brazil. At face value, asbestos remains a natural wonder, capable of uses no other resource can perform. So why is it banned in the UK now, as it is across vast swathes of the Western world? To answer this, it's worth jumping back in time to the discovery of asbestos to understand how its unique properties came to be viewed as supreme, and why, centuries later, it went from being the magic mineral to what became its counter-nickname, the evil dust. If you were born after the initial ban, it's unlikely you will have ever actually seen asbestos. Up close, asbestos looks like wool, or a starch cotton made of firm, tightly knit strands. Partly because of its natural softness and ability to be woven into any shape, asbestos was used for the longest time to make clothing and other textiles. Traces of asbestos used in human civilization go back as far as the Stone Age, appearing again in 4000 BC as evidence of having been used to make candle wicks. Egyptian pharaohs wrapped embalmed bodies in asbestos cloth to preserve them, while other civilizations around the same period used it to fortify clay pots against wear and tear and heat damage. The word asbestos is widely thought to derive from the Greek asbestos, meaning inextinguishable. The classical Greek historian Herodotus describes how the dead in Athens would first be wrapped in asbestos cloth to separate their ashes from those of the funeral pyre. The Emperor Charlemagne was even said to have used asbestos as a party trick, clearing the table after a banquet before removing the tablecloth and casting it into and out of a roaring fire, without a mark, to the amazement of his guests. Yet, even the Greeks and Romans knew something about the mineral was capable of doing great harm to the human body. Slaves who spent all day weaving asbestos into cloth were frequently recorded with sickness of the lungs. This is perhaps the earliest record we have of asbestos-related disease. Unthinkable though it would have been at the time Herodotus wrote, to have these observations of what made slaves sick at work override the moral foundation on which the Greeks justified slavery and its produce, slaves were provided with breathing aids fashioned out of the bladders of goats and lambs to prevent them from falling ill. Asbestos would continue to be mined manually and used for many centuries, but it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution of the 1800s that mining and production exploded on a truly global scale. In every engine of modern industry, from steam engines, turbines and boilers, to ovens and electrical generators, asbestos became essential to strengthening man's glorious designs against the corrosive effects of the elements. The first commercial asbestos mines were established in Canada and Russia in the 1870s, from which asbestos, in its softest form, would go into more than 95% of all asbestos products. Mines in Italy and Australia soon popped up, and by the beginning of the 20th century, asbestos production had grown worldwide to more than 30,000 tons annually. An image concocted as a nod to ancient Greece was even used to market the magic mineral. Lady Asbestos, a shield-wielding goddess sent to protect mankind from fire. While even Greek slaves had been afforded some protection from asbestos, however, the same could not be said for the miners and textile workers in the satanic mills of industrial Great Britain. The toil of lifting raw asbestos out of the mines fell mostly to working men, while children and women were sent to work in factories preparing, carding, and spinning raw fibres for mechanised weaving. Britain's Industrial Revolution is not exactly remembered as a time of great concern for the well-being of the working poor. The country was becoming infinitely more productive, yes, but of the entire mechanism from which abundant new wealth was being created, it was human labour that lay at the heart. Around 1898, the UK government hired a team of medical inspectors to check on the working conditions of UK factories. When reports came back, one female inspector named Lucy Dean Streatfield reported what she called the evil effects of asbestos dust, so thick in the air that factory workers often reported not being able to see more than 6 feet in front of them.
The evil effects of asbestos dust have also instigated a microscopic examination of the mineral dust by Her Majesty's medical inspector. Clearly revealed was the sharp, glass-like, jagged nature of the particles, and where they are allowed to rise and remain suspended in the air of the room in any quantity, the effects have been found to be injurious, as might have been expected.
Of course, dust was a part of life during this period. But it wasn't until inspectors learned of a mystery illness that attacked the lungs of workers in factories thick with asbestos residue that alarm bells began to ring. In 1906, the first documented death of an asbestos worker was recorded at London's Charing Cross Hospital. A man of 33 years old, then still considered too young to die of a respiratory disease, had suffered a pulmonary failure caused by a large amount of asbestos fibre found in his lungs. His fate would soon be emulated. One man's magic mineral was now another's certain death. Medical experts soon came up with a term for the affliction, asbestosis, a condition in which the tissue lining of the lungs is inflamed from accumulative minute cuts made by imperishable asbestos fibres, causing the tiny air sacs which allow oxygen to pass into the blood to collapse with fluid, eventually making breathing impossible for the victim. As you can imagine, these discoveries, compelling though they were of little consequence to occupational safety standards. As far as titans of industry were concerned, mining asbestos was a symbol of progress, what domesticating wheat had been to agriculture. A game changer, completely indispensable, especially to big business. And so, in 1906, insurance companies began reducing coverage and benefits for asbestos workers, while charging ever higher premiums for claims made against employers. The cost of insuring them would overwhelm these firms. Better instead to relinquish liability and prevent the truth from getting out. In part two, we explore the case of one female textile worker, Nellie Kershaw, whose story takes place in the Roaring Twenties, just as worldwide cases of asbestos-related disease begin to manifest at extraordinary levels. We'll also look at the journey this industry took in the UK throughout the tumultuous events of the 20th century, culminating in the decision to make asbestos illegal towards the end. Finally, we'll look at the difference the ban made. Did it save lives? Almost certainly. Are people still dying from asbestos? Around 5,000 per year. But then there's the question, how many are dying because of asbestos they've never seen, touched, or knew was there to begin with? How safe is a country in which 6 million tons of asbestos, enough to fill 14 Wembley stadiums, remains hidden in residential and public buildings? how safe are its schools, 80% of which are known to contain asbestos? How many asbestos fibers are in all our lungs? The truth is, no one knows. The harder truth is that very few are willing to find out. This has been part one of Dust to Dust. If you'd like to find out more about Respublica's campaign, Airtight on Asbestos, please go to www.airtightonasbestos.uk, where you can find more of our research, blog posts, and episodes to this podcast, as well as learn how to contact us and follow us on Twitter. The handle for that is @SaveTheirBreath. We hope you'll join us for part two.